It's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art. Here on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, with your hosts, David Von Strong and Leslie M. Scott Jones. And now, here's David and Leslie.
Good morning! It is really early on
Homegrown.
This Sunday morning.
Sunday.
Yes.
Sunday.
Are you like, are
February
the 5th? Did you become like a used car salesman really quick there?
Yeah, that's what I do. That's what I do. I'm trying to infuse some excitement into the show, Leslie.
I see.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Okay.
I'm trying to get people hyped up.
I am
It is
so...
Sunday. It is 10 o'clock. I am happy to be here.
I'm happy now
to see my lovely co-host, Leslie. How are you doing today, Leslie?
Aw, precious. I'm good. I did a show last night, so I have a little show hangover, but other than that...
Yep. Well's doing well.
It is.
Well is out there. Go to Live Arts. Get your tickets right now, because it's going to be a maze ball.
Seriously.
Because my girl's in the house.
I have so much fun playing a 6-year-old drunk black man.
I think it's her spirit. You know, character,
well, you know,
actually.
You know, I had grandfathers.
Right
so.
On. Well, we just had Groundhog Day. Steve
yes.
Bannon saw a shadow. So there's 6 more weeks of shredding the Constitution. So
awesome.
I'm sorry to let everybody know that. But hey, Trump's on vacation already, which is good because America needs a break.
Right.
Yeah, we just need him to stop writing things and stop saying things. Just go somewhere. You know, you can actually stay there for
and
the
it
next.
And it is so obvious that he writes his own speeches, right? Because seriously, a fourth grader could write better. Like,
but here's the deal. Like, so him and Palpatine, I mean Bannon, and Steve Miller, which I thought I would never hate the name Steve Miller until 2017.
And here we are.
Because I love the Steve Miller Band.
Yeah.
You know, the most soulful white guys you ever seen in what? Anyway, but they all write the speeches together. But what's funny is that he can't read it. Like, when you see him, like, it's just so... Because, I mean, I guess we're so used to the gravitas and just the oratory genius of Chocolate Jesus Barack Obama. And then we
Chocolate
go over
Jesus.
To, like,
oh, God.
Kindergarten book report.
Right. Yeah, we don't
type.
Know.
Reading from
yeah,
teleprompter,
we
and
we
I
don't
just,
know how to do it. It's really upsetting, is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, when he's not screaming like a dictator, he's really out of his element.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. All right.
Yeah. Trumplies.com. Somebody get on that.
Oh my God.
Oh, I just want to say thoughts and prayers go out to the people that suffered in the Bowling Green massacre.
Stop. You gotta stop.
No, I mean...
Stop with the alternative facts, David.
I think all of the zero lives that were lost in that horrible tragedy and the families of those zero people who it affected would be offended by your laughing, Leslie.
But I'm sorry. You know, at least she actually, like, unlike everyone else in his administration, I mean, she's an idiot. Let's just face that. But at least she, like, came back and said, oh, I misspoke. Like, that. Those are words that we are never going to hear from Sean Spicer. You know,
and I don't think you can be a political mastermind if you keep saying, well, what I really meant to say was, you know, actually... You know, but whatever.
Well, let's face it. He probably didn't put her on the cabinet because she's so smart. He put her on the cabinet so he could grab something.
I don't think she has one of those. But just going there. Yeah. And
wow.
On that note.
On
let's
that
just,
note.
let's just go to our first guest. Yo, I am super excited to have this person on the show. I've been a big fan of his ever since I saw him on Real Time with Bill Maher. Just watching all of his YouTube stuff, he cracks me the hell up. He is so hilarious. He's coming to Charlottesville on the 11th at the Southern Cafe at Music Hall with Drew Morgan and Corey Ryan Forster. This is Trey Crowder, the liberal redneck in the house with us today.
What's up, Trey?
How you doing?
Not much. Can y'all hear me?
Yeah. Yeah, we can hear you just fine.
All right.
First of all, thank you
all
for...
Right.
Go ahead.
Well, here we are.
All right.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Thank you so much for coming on and taking some time out early in the morning to say hey to us. So First of all, for the people that don't know you, just describe yourself, describe the liberal redneck, describe your upbringing. I know you're from the great state of Tennessee. So just talk a little bit about yourself for the people that don't know you.
Yeah, well, basically, so I grew up in the middle of nowhere in Tennessee, a place called Salina, Tennessee. It's actually only like 30 minutes away from Bowling Green, Kentucky, so it has been a rough week for me. You know, I've been pretty down over what happened back home.
Yeah, but, I'm sorry.
But for anyone who actually, when I heard about that, I got a text about that from a comedian friend of mine that was like, you know, I hope your family's okay or whatever else. I hadn't heard anything about it yet. Like that she had just said it or whatever. And I actually kind of, you know, freaked out at first. And then I looked it up and just started, you know, busting out laughing because of how perfectly ridiculous and in sync that was for their administration to just make up a massacre. But anyway, I grew up at, real poor in that little middle of nowhere town and very redneck, stereotypically white trash redneck upbringing. But I never have believed all the types of like stuff that, you know, rednecks are supposed to believe, meaning like, you know, I've never been racist, I've never been homophobic, I've never been religious, I've never been any of that stuff. And then I, you know, went to college and all that jazz and everything, and so I come across as a redneck, and I mean, in a lot of ways I am a redneck, cause I always have been, but I'm not any of those things either, which that confuses people outside of the South. You know, inside the South, I think people realize that there's plenty of people like me out there. But in other places, people think that I'm like a unicorn or something. You know,
right on. Yeah, so I can see how there's that. You know,
they're really excited by it sometimes, or their curiosity is piqued at the very least. So, I got into comedy almost it was like 6.5 years ago, and that's sort of been my thing the whole time. And then last spring I made some videos based around the character, the liberal redneck, which is just that whole thing I just described dialed up to 11. And those went viral, and then, you know, here we are.
So I have one question for you, Trey, is how did you escape the stereotype of the redneck that we all associate with that moniker? Like how did you in your upbringing escape the racism, the homophobia? Like was that just your family, or was that something that you came to as you grew older?
No, I chalked that up to my family, specifically my dad, who's kind of the OG liberal redneck. He was like, he passed away in 2013, but he was a lot like that. Also, despite the fact that he had lived in that little town his entire life, you know, 50 plus years or whatever. And what I chalk his philosophy or whatever up to, and this is maybe overly simplistic, but his only brother, my Uncle Tim, is gay. And I think that informed a lot of that for him, you know, over the course of his life. And that's the reason that I stopped going to church. My dad didn't go to church, but I would go with like aunts and uncles and cousins and stuff like that, just like everybody else did when I was little. But once I found out my uncle was gay, a lot of stuff they were saying at church that had previously been, you know, flown over my head started like connecting for me.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, this ain't for me. You know, like I see my uncle every Sunday for, you know, chicken and Titans games or whatever, and I had never even emailed Jesus, so why would I take this side in this debate? You know what I mean? Like, so I stopped going. So I never really even talked to my dad about it, because the thing is, I knew I was different, like in my town or whatever, but I don't know. I didn't know, like, how weird it was to, like, other people or whatever, so I never even really asked my dad, like, why don't you think these things?
Yeah.
But I know that I assume anyway that his brother being gay had an awful lot to do with that.
So let's go into that. How your kind of like lifestyle like like your life shaped your comedy in the beginning of your career? How hard was it when you were getting on stage and you have an accent, you definitely carry that southern feel about you, so people are expecting something to come out of your mouth, and then these ideas come out of your mouth and they're like, whoa, wait, especially like in your hometown. Like, talk about the start of your career and how people kind of absorbed your material at first.
Well, in cities, in or outside the South, outside of the rural South is mm-hmm. how I should put it, which there's not a lot of stand up that takes place in the rural South,
true.
By the way. But it actually played very well, because you're right. People would hear my accent, because when I'm on stage, the accent sounds more like it does in the videos. That's not on purpose. It's just like an adrenaline thing. Like, anytime I get fired up, I either got the adrenaline going or I'm drunk or mad or whatever, the accent always goes through the roof. And so when I'm on stage, the accent's a lot more pronounced. People do hear it, and they do think that I'm about to be a specific type of comedian, namely
right.
like a whole blue collar cable guy type thing.
Right.
And then I'm not. But
which I'll get into that later.
Again, in cities and stuff like that, that worked. Like, people liked that. Like, it surprised them in a good way.
Right.
Because in my experience, cities are kind of cities, no matter what part of the country you're in. It's the areas outside of the cities where, that's Trumpville. You
right.
know what I mean? That's a generalization, but it's been largely my experience. So even doing comedy in the South, in Knoxville, Chattanooga, Nashville, whatever, I mean, it was fine. I never really had much problems with it. Having said that, I've went out to the boonies, and I've done shows in biker bars and stuff like that over the course of my career that I don't know why the hell I ever agreed to do it or what I was thinking that they would think about it. But, yeah, that did not go well. I mean, I've never been stabbed or nothing, but
right.
I've been sort of run out of town before. That has happened.
They showed you the state line, did they?
Yeah.
So why is that? Why is there not as much stand-up in rural areas as there are in the cities? Because, I mean, everybody loves stand-up comedy. I mean, CNN's just about to do a special on comedy, like, right now. So why do you think that is?
It's just hard to, I mean, for a lot of reasons. Like, if you're, like me, I'm from an extremely rural area, but I had to move to a city to do comedy because that's where, like, the clubs are, or that's where open mics and stuff are, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Those kinds of things don't exist in small towns, because I mean, they can't, you can't have an open mic in Salina, Tennessee. There might be one drunk dude with a guitar, playing Skinner songs, the same two Skinner songs over and over or whatever, like, maybe that's all you're going to get. So it doesn't make sense. So it doesn't exist there. And so if you want to do it, you leave. And that goes for musicians, too. And then on the other side of it, so that means you've got to bring people in. And that's very hard to do. It's hard to, if you have a bar and you want to bring in any kind of act to a really small town, it's very hard to do that, because it's hard to get enough people, to come out to it or whatever to justify having it. So usually people just don't, I can't really elaborate on this any, because I had long since moved away from my hometown. I don't know the story. I don't know how it went or anything like that. But Two Live Crew did come through Salina, Tennessee.
No way.
About 3 years ago at this place called the Sawmill.
Oh, you got to open for them next time that happens.
Yeah, and that was a big deal. That was a very, very big deal when that happened.
So how did you start doing comedy? Like, how did you, I mean, little boy from Salina, Tennessee, how in the world did you say, yeah, I'm going to be a comedian?
Well, it's very remote and it's very rural, but we do still have cable there. And so we had HBO, and I already told you a little bit about my dad, and my dad was cool. In 1998, I was 12 years old. Me and my dad watched, Bigger and Blacker, Chris Rock special
yes.
on
awesome.
HBO when it came out. And that was the I remember watching it and thinking to myself that I wanted to do that. And so that's how I, that's like what inspired me or whatever to want to be a comedian. But I didn't, then I did, I, you know, went through the rest of my childhood there. I went to college in Cookeville, Tennessee, which is a mid-sized town, but there's no comedy clubs or nothing. And then when I got out, I found a job in the Knoxville area where there was a comedy club, and it was kind of like just a, all right, you know, it's now or never kind of thing. You know what I mean? You've always wanted to do this, so it's time to actually do it. And so I just did, signed up for an open mic, and then never really looked back after that.
Right on. We're going to come back to you. Just hang out for a second. We're going to do a drop right now, all right?
All right. Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC.
All right, and we are back. And if you're just tuning in, well, where the heck have you been? I mean, geez, we've been on the air for, I don't know, like 17 minutes or something? Geez.
Something like that.
And you are listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC Resistance Radio. And we are talking to Trey Crowder, the liberal redneck.
Yes, yes, we are. We were just talking about comedy. We were talking about influences. Chris Rock, big influence of mine. So let's go back to, since we were talking about racism and homophobia, let's talk about Trump. Let's talk about how is he affecting your life as he's affecting the rest of ours? What do you think about how he's doing so far?
All right, well, let me preface this with a disclaimer and say, like, this is not worth it to me. Like, I would rather him have lost and us not be going through all this.
As would a majority of people have.
But it would be disingenuous of me, though, to sit here and act like it probably isn't going to help me. I mean, with my whole thing and what it is or whatever, like, you know, I'm one of the few people in this country who might actually benefit from the Trump presidency just by nature of what it is that I do, and that I'm a straight white man. That also really helps.
This
so,
is true.
But I mean, I can't, having said that, I can't stand the guy, and I still, I don't know. I mean, good Lord, what's left to say? But I'll say this, like, when I tried to, when he first got elected, I very naively, like, I tried to tell myself that it might ultimately be okay, like, that if for no other reason than his own gigantic ego, he might actually put some real effort forth and try to do a good job and whatever else, you know, maybe. That's what I was telling myself. But then every, like, literally every move he's made since then has been so, like, comically just egregious,
right?
And on the nose, like, to the point that it almost seems like he's still trolling, like he's literally just doing some of this stuff to piss off the people on the other side or something. Like, that's how insane some of them are, and every one of them have been that way. So hope is well and truly dead for me.
Right.
So I guess
his presidency goes. I have no faith
because there's
his ability to do a good job.
Because there's two type of people in this type of world that's going on. There are people that are like, he's not going to do anything. You know, this is just BS. You know, it will be done in 4 years. And there are people that are like, this is the end of the world, and he is going to sign ourselves into the apocalypse. Would you say you're more towards A or B?
Out of those two, I'm A. I'm the former more. And I'll
tell
you why.
You seem pretty chill about it.
It's funny how this kind of, how things change, but like, so in 2008, I was like the 2008 equivalent of a Bernie bro, but for Obama, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, there were a lot of people like that in 2008, obviously, but what I'm saying is like, that was like, I fully drunk the Kool-Aid and absolutely was a true believer. I loved Obama. I thought he was like a literal savior of the American people or whatever.
Ditto.
I still love Obama. I still think he did a good job. But one thing I learned from him and through him, through his presidency, was that I no longer believe that any one man can influence two like grandiose or sweeping of changes in this country just by virtue of the way that it's designed.
Right.
And when Obama was in there, that sucked. Like, that was a bad thing for me. But now, ironically, I'm, like, taking comfort in that belief because now that Trump's in there. But, yeah, so I'm holding out hope that he will not surely get another term. And I don't think that he can knock us down so far in a 4-year period that we won't be able to recover or whatever.
Right on.
So
let's switch subjects to a more pleasant issues. I watch all your Porch Rants, and I got to say I'm a huge fan. Some of the subjects that you talk about on Porch Rants I think are interesting, like addiction to prescription pills that you're really personally affected by, supporting the troops mm-hmm. and how we don't donate enough money to veterans and things of that nature. Like, you call yourself the Black Lives Matter, which some people think is a partisan issue, but is really not, because Black lives should
right.
matter. So, I mean, what I guess I'm saying is you call yourself a liberal redneck, but a lot of the stuff that you talk about is really bipartisan. Elaborate on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just try to be fair with this stuff. You know what I mean? Like, whatever
right
the issue is, I just try to be fair about it. And I've also, what I've always tried to do, and this is such a simple thing, but like so many people don't do it, is I genuinely try to put myself, you know, in the other person's shoe, like look at it from the other party's perspective or whatever, and see how I would feel about it if that were the case.
Oh my
and
God, you actually
use opinions
empathy?
On things.
That's
and so,
weird.
You know, I think they just end up coming across that way. And also, I will also say though, for the record, like, some of them absolutely are, you know, sort of bipartisan or neutral or just, I guess, like, in my opinion, common sense type stuff.
Right on.
But most of them, even the ones that you probably view that way, are not viewed that way by a lot of people.
Which is unfortunate.
Particularly on the far right or the more stereotypical rednecks, you know what I mean? Like, they would disagree with you about that, about some of them anyway.
So speaking of empathy, is that something that you found works well with comedy? Because, I mean, a lot of comedians go the other way with that. They become
completely,
they do, you know, antagonistic comedy. So how is that working for you?
Well, I mean, I'm still pretty antagonistic, but it's like, but the thing is, I'm antagonistic towards people and attitudes that, that suck. You know what I mean? So like, people are pretty, everyone else is pretty well okay with it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But though, I actually do, I've always tried to do, I've got a lot of bits, like that are my actual act that I think that are like ultimately hopeful or whatever. And I don't know, I've always wanted to do that because it's funny because like most comedians, I mean, I am pretty cynical. Just generally speaking, but like, I don't know. I try to be hopeful though, ultimately, because I just get so tired of everything being so negative all the time.
Right on.
You know what I mean? And like, when you get into comedy, it's like to make people laugh, which is ostensibly to bring people up mm-hmm. or whatever. You know what I mean? To like make the bad stuff easier to deal with or more palatable or whatever.
Yeah.
And to me, so to me, like, that means, you know, inserting a little bit of positivity into it if you can. So,
well,
I mean, yeah, I do try to do that. Sometimes that's a Herculean task, though, in today's America.
I think you do it incredibly well. Like, I don't think you're this type of, like, Jeff Foxworthy, Larry the Cable Guy character. I don't see you as a caricature, because when I watch you in your YouTube stuff, you speak with an incredible conviction. And you are,
yeah.
you speak with, you know, an incredible heartfelt quality that.
And intelligence.
Yeah. And that is not normally seen in comedy. And I know I do comedy as well. And also when I'm not, also I'm trying to make you think as well as laugh. So I really appreciate the stuff that you do, you know, from, you know, one guy to another. I'm a really big fan. I just want to say that out loud. So I'm gonna hit you with a hard question before we leave. Super Bowl today. Who you got, Falcons or Pats?
I think the Pats are going to win, but I want the Falcons to win.
Thank you. Like everybody else in the world.
The Pats have won enough. I'd like to see Atlanta take one home, though.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be nice, right?
Yeah.
All right. You know what, Trey? We're gonna ask a little favor of you. If you could just say, this is Trey Crowder, and you're listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC.
This is Trey Crowder, and you're listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC.
You completely rock, man. Thank you so much.
We're in another echelon right now. Trey, thank you so much. Get some sleep, all right?
I am. I'm going straight back to bed.
All right, brother, take it easy. Thank you so much. I'm catching that show on the 11th.
Peace. Thanks, Trey. Okay.
Cool.
That was so awesome. Right?
Dude.
That was amazing, right?
I have a little boy inside me that's freaking out.
Right?
That's just amazing.
Yeah, you were having a little bromance over there.
Hey, look, you
all right?
Look, I just, you know, when you got somebody on that you really respect, you gotta give them the flowers before they can still smell them, you know what I'm saying?
Isn't that sweet?
All right.
Okay, David, what's going on?
What's going on? Oh my God, so much stuff is going on. Currently running now through April the 9th. It's the Renaissance season at the American Shakespeare Center. This season features Merchant of Venice and Coriolanus by Shakespeare, Sheridan School for Scandal, Emma Whipday's Shakespeare Sister, and The Fair Maid of Exchange for performances only. All playing at the Breckfires at Stanton. Right now through the 12th is Love Letters by A.R. Gurney and The Cellar at Four County. We talked about it last week. It's going to be dope. Currently running through the 25th is WOW at Live Arts Theater. There's one chick in there that's subpar, but everybody else is really good. You should go see it.
You know what? You want to get hit.
Yeah, maybe so. All right, now through March 23rd is Memory and Cultural Beliefs by Cuban artist Jose Badia at the 2nd Street Gallery. Today, The Imposter, a play for demagogues by the UVA Spanish Theater Group in the Helms Theater at UVA. Today and tomorrow, we got auditions for Dancing with Myself, Teen Arts Production, a teen dramedy about seven high school girls and the labels they've forced to wear. Four County, see you today. Also today is auditions for non-singing roles in two Victory Hall opera productions. If you want to check that out,
Victory Hall,
go to web.victoryhallopera, all one word, .org/auditions. So check that out. February 7th is Lunchtime Talk in the Object Study Gallery at the Fralin Art Museum at UVA. February 9th is One Mic Stand, which is spoken word artist at Piedmont Junior Community College, PVCC, for those of y'all who ain't around here. February 10th through March 29th is Alan Eichhorst's Inner Outlook in PVCC's North Gallery, and in the South Gallery, Nancy Bass's Life Size, New Paintings of the Herd, and Aileen Gregg's Idol Worship at PVCC. February 11th, we also have Playwriting Through Memory, Invention and Constraints, Playwriting Workshop with an emphasis on using memory to inspire dramatic premises, emotional journeys, character development, onstage imagery, setting. Former NYC, now local playwright, Ariel Stress. Oh, she's from NYC. I have to check her out. Leads a seminar at the Writer House. February 11th is Upfront Evening of Romance at the CB Studio. It's Charlottesville Ballet. And your music options for this week. Today is Keith McFadden at Wild Wolf. Two Wishes at Glass House. February 7th, we got Charlottesville Jazz at Cafe Cultura, Goth Night at the Pit at Cinema Taco, Travis Elliott, Fellini's. On the 8th, we have Jazz Collective at Fellini's, Alice in the Blenders at Dirty Nellie's, Kendall Street Company at Rapture. On the 9th, we have Second Thursday Old Time Jam at the Front Porch. All ages and ability levels welcome. That sounds like something. February 9th, we got Tyler Dix at Fellini's. February 9th is Oh Wow Boy at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. And V Beatty's Party Urbano hip hop show featuring Virginia rappers V Dot, Mike Turner, equally opposite Malk the Rapper, and Quinn's Books at the Ante Room. I am so there. Another hip hop showcase, Can I Kick It? From SHU, UVA student hip hop organization featuring Keese, Danielle, Sundai, and Jay Wills at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall. February 10th, you got Mojo Pie, Dirty Nellies. The 11th, you got Upfront, Evening of Romance at CB Studio. Glass Betty at Heritage on Main. Revved Up Rockabilly with the James 3 Trio at the Whiskey Bar. Ann Laurie at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Eric Franson and then the Souls Transit Authority on Fellini's. And on the 14th, Valentine's Day, you have the Shelter for Help. In Emergency, Sarah, Planned Parenthood, and the Women's Initiative will be participating in 1 Billion Rising, a musical event at the Ix Art Park. So take your lady to go see that, or your man, whatever. Every Monday, there's singer-songwriter night at the local. Every Tuesday, there's traditional Irish session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Every Wednesday, open mic at Pro Renata Farm Brewery and Jazz Collective at Fellini's. And the Mike Rosensky and Def Decker Quartet at Miller's. And every Thursday, John Dearth Quintet at Miller's. And if you're an artist, you have an event, you want people to know about it, you want to tell them, contact us at our Facebook page, web.facebook.com/homegrownwpvc, or email us at homegrown947@gmail.com.
Hey, this is Michael Clem. You are listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC.
All right, cool. This has been 31 minutes past the hour. This is Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Stay tuned after the show for the Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Sean McCord. Their guest today is Goddess L, talking about romance and relationships on their Valentine's Day show. And that's something that I need to definitely check out.
Yes. Yes, you do.
I don't know nothing about either of those.
No, you don't. And you definitely need to check it out.
This show is brought to you by Blue Moon Diner. Breakfast all day, every day, with brunch on Saturdays and Sundays, and carefully constructed diner food. They even got the parsley on the side. It's so cute. For Wednesday afternoons and evenings. And speaking of evenings, Blue Moon is nice enough to provide a venue for local and visiting artists. This week,
you're right.
I'm getting there. Okay. Third show, Jamie Dyer and Friends on Tuesday. On Wednesday, it's Jim Wave. On Thursday, it's David Tewksbury. And on Friday, it's local musician and sound person Phil West and Tony LaRocco at Blue Moon Diner at 512 West Main Street. It is a place.
It is a place. Did you need some more coffee today, David?
No, I'm actually not done with this coffee.
Okay.
I had a coffee I got the pepper, and I went to the gym, and I'm psyched.
Okay.
I just got through an amazing interview, and I'm about to get through another interview.
Oh, my God. Hi. Okay, so our next guest. Sorry, I have to get the piece of paper because I don't want to get your name wrong.
Thank you.
I know you would appreciate that.
Yeah.
Our next guest, Adriana Anders, author of Under Her Skin. Wow. Okay, so apparently it's a romance novel.
Hot.
It is.
So hot.
Yes, David was reading a little bit before we went on the air.
I don't think I've ever heard oral sex described so descriptively and salaciously. Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. I mean... Yeah,
there were a couple of reasons that David's been really excited.
And I've also been sitting down the entire time, so just
it's okay. You know, let that fade before you stand up. That's all I'm asking. Okay.
So, just letting it calm down. So, what inspired you to write such words?
Dirty words. I guess it's a combination of things. I've always liked romance since I was a kid, mm-hmm. but when I was pregnant with my daughter, so my second child, I had wild, mad hormones running through me.
Oh, yeah.
And the erotic stuff really, really appealed to me.
Yeah. Right on.
So I read a lot of it, and that's when I started writing again.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time I got to my 2-month maternity leave, the sort of combination of writing and hormones was at this peak, and that's what started coming out.
Right on.
Yeah. See, I think that's a lot. That's what a lot of men don't realize about pregnancy. Like, yeah, our hormones go crazy, mm-hmm. but most of the time it's leaning toward the bedroom crazy, not the I'm going to get a knife and kill you because you did this to me crazy.
Yeah, no, it was a positive experience overall. So pregnancy can be tough, but those hormones sure made it enjoyable.
Oh, yeah.
And it hasn't gone away. So meaning the hormones are not there anymore, but the desire to write sexy is still there.
Right on.
Awesome.
So it proves to be a pretty awesome outlet for whatever you got going on in that head of yours. Right on.
So tell us about the story.
So I've written a bunch of different things, but this was the one that ended up sort of resonating with me and with readers, I think. It's based on something I heard on the radio. So I was in my car one day, and I heard a story on a national radio station about a woman who gave tattoo removal away for victims of abuse and people who were leaving gangs and prison and so on behind.
Oh, wow.
And that was my story. That was my inspiration. As soon as I heard that, I knew I was going to write a story about this woman. And I love Virginia. And I love the Blue Ridge Mountains.
Virginia is for lovers.
It is. It is. I can attest to that.
Oh, yeah.
Hot. Insatiable lovers.
And it's gorgeous. And it's really, you know, it's moody and atmospheric. And
yeah.
So I was really inspired to write the story about a woman who had suffered abuse and who
I was gonna
wanted
say,
to.
Yeah. So you, and, you know, I don't want to put anybody on Front Street, but you Are there any? Is there anything in the novel that mirrors your personal life? Is it just character driven, or you just want to dream about this other person in another different life, or is it?
Yeah.
Or is there any like actual like real stuff that's, you know, coming out of that, and you just want to like live it through another, like vicariously through another person? So
pretty much everything I write has bits and pieces of me
okay.
in it. I think inevitably it comes through, even just little conversations and little things that happen in my head at night. I have had, I think like most women I know, unfortunately, I've had experiences with some kind of sexual assault in my life.
One out of four.
And so that's something that is really important to me. When I was a kid, I used to be an actor, and I acted in a play about acquaintance rape that we took to colleges across the country.
Right.
So I have had a lot of experience with that.
Right on.
Were you involved? We talked, a couple of months ago to Jerry Shermer, who is, with,
yeah.
is that what?
That's
awesome.
It.
Yep. Oh, you're one of her kids. That's so great.
Yeah, so I worked with Jerry. I worked with Doug Grissom, the playwright, and we went on tour for several months going to colleges. And the one thing that we saw at every single college was people coming up to us after the show telling us about their experiences. And for some, they had never talked to anyone before. So it is a matter that's really, really close to my heart.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Have you thought about writing screenplays? Or writing stage plays as well as Harlequin Romance?
So it's not Harlequin.
I apologize.
Harlequin might get upset with you for saying that. Although they do
have... No, this is great. So describe the difference between... Because I messed up. So educate me, because
sure.
I know nothing about romance novels.
Yeah.
How is Harlequin different from what you write in your novels?
So Harlequin is a publisher. And Harlequin has lots of different imprints. So they do a sexy line. I think they have a line called Blaze.
Is that the
they
one where
do.
Fabio's always like holding some chick?
Well,
like,
so Fabio is so yesterday.
Yeah.
Nobody has those covers anymore. Romance has truly modernized.
It has.
And the writing has changed. In a lot of instances, it's become more literary than it was. Harlequin still puts out certain sort of shorter romance that are written a certain way.
Okay.
But the quality is still pretty good. I mean, they've been doing it for decades.
Yeah.
Right.
And the Harlequin folks are the ones who have been doing it the longest.
Right.
So I'm also a writer, and I also 2 years ago published a romantic fictional novel.
Not Harlequin. Self-produced.
But when I was getting ready to market the book, anytime I went to an agent or, anybody to say, hey, here's my book, why don't you buy it and sell it? What I thought was very interesting is that they had specific things about the book. They're like, okay, so how many sex scenes do you have in it?
Oh, wow.
And do you have, is there a rape scene? Do you describe certain, certain sexual positions and things like that? And if my answer was yes to any of those, they were like, no, we can't do that. That's not romance. That's erotica. And we don't do that.
Huh.
Right. There are subgenres that are really specific to romance. So romance readers for decades have been reading romance for a happy ending.
Yep.
They want to know that things are going to turn out well. And as things progress in the world, I totally gravitate towards that myself. I would much rather read something that makes me feel happy and lets me escape for a little while. For some people, that's horror movies or horror novels. And for some, it's romance. And that's definitely the case for me. Within romance, you have sort of modern contemporary. You even have dark contemporary.
Yes.
You have erotic romance. There's also inspirational, which is religious romance.
And there's also like fantasy romance. So,
sci-fi.
Yeah.
There is pretty much, if you have thought of it, it exists out there. So romance is not just the, you know, Fabio covers that we picture. And romance is also an engine. It's a way for women to express themselves, their desires, but also their happy endings, and for women to take back power. I think, and for men as well. I mean, there's some great romances written by men, for men. There are also gay and lesbian romances and so on. So it's a pretty interesting.
I just want to say that all of my romance novel education and background comes from my grandmother's bookshelf. In the 1980s.
Oh, my goodness.
That explains anything.
It's changed.
You know what, David?
It's changed a little.
That explains a lot about you, actually. And we'll talk about that after the show.
Thank you.
Well, romance it's become more diverse. And it's really a domain that is led by women, but also by people of color, by gays and lesbians. It's really a place where people can express themselves.
So I completely agree that that a lot of women read romance for the happy ending. And I'm wondering if, because they're reading it for the happy ending, that the struggle before the happy ending has to be so counter to it. Like, is that something that you have
to be
noticed?
So deep that...
Yeah, that they have to... You know, pulling themselves out of it has to be so much of a thing that to get to that happy ending. I mean, is that something you found?
It depends. I think it depends on the reader and the type of romance that they're into. I really like a deep, dark struggle that speaks to me. And I think life is really hard. And I think that if we have the possibility of happiness at the end of a tough life, then that's amazing. But there are some romances that don't act that way. There are some romances that are super positive throughout. But I think any good story has a really, really strong sort of crisis moment. It has a lot of conflict. So I think the best stories are the ones where the characters have to go really far in order to reach that happy ending.
Cool. We're going to talk book. We're going to talk character stories, all that good stuff just for a minute. Hold tight, all right?
Yeah.
Cool. Welcome to Homegrown, your show about local art, brought to you by Blue Moon Diner. It is 44 minutes past the hour, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and we are talking to Miss Adria. Is it Miss or Mrs.?
It's Mrs.
Okay.
It's Mrs.
Sorry about that, guys.
It's okay, Ms.
Ms. Adriana Adams.
She taken, y'all.
Yeah, yeah. All this hot talk. She's got brothers lined up outside. Miss Anderson. So let's talk about the whole process of getting a book made. And I'm sure Leslie's got a lot of experience in this. So why don't you talk about like your struggle in actually going from typewriter. This is how far back I am.
Oh my God.
I'm so old.
Okay, so the book is finished. Mm-hmm. Now what?
So it's different for romance because there's a big organization in the U.S. called the Romance Writers of America. Hmm. And they have local chapters. So there's one, actually there are a couple in Virginia. There's one in D.C. They're all over. There's some online as well. And they're huge, huge in mentoring. They do contests that give you a chance to get in front of agents and editors. And that's how I got my agent. Hmm. I specifically sought this agent because all of my favorite authors were agented by her. Mm-hmm. So I went through a contest and I won the contest and I got her and she got me a contract. It was a lot easier, I think, than it is for most people just because I knew what I liked. And I think that was really important. But today there's so much indie publishing going on and it's so huge and independent authors can do really, really well. Mm-hmm. So I think the opportunities are huge today. I think it's important to have a good product. It's important to work a lot and work really hard on your writing. But, you know, there are tons of freelance editors. There are tons of people who can critique and beta read and so on.
Cool.
So you talked about how romance has grown over the years. So are you going to continue to write? Like, is this going to become a series, or are you going to? It is.
So it actually is a series. The first book is out this Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
The second book is out April 4th, and the third on August 1st.
Look at you.
Yeah. So the publisher.
So it's like the Star Wars of like romance novels.
That's exactly what it's.
That's
like.
Exactly what right it is, on. David.
They want today. Fans want more books. So as soon as you put something out, they want more and more and more.
Well, and especially if they like the characters, like if they have really cemented themselves, like, ooh, I really like this person, then, they want to see what happens next
and
in their life.
People look forward to, there are some secondary characters who have sort of minor stories, and people want to know what happens to them. And so this is a great way to give them those those answers and those little stories.
So did you write all three and submit them all at once?
No, I submitted one and pitches for the second and the third, and one of them was rejected. One of the they bought the series, but they asked for I think they did the right thing. So I think what I ended up writing was probably more in line with the series. Although the book I had pitched, I'd written 50,000 words of. So I've got those words. So there is another book out there.
Right on.
Okay. Awesome. So what's your writing process? Because I know there's always contention when anybody talks about writing. You know, there's the standard, like, you have to write every day, no matter what, whether you throw it away or not, you have to write every day and all that stuff, which I don't subscribe to, but just because, I have a life. But but what's your process?
I'm a mess. I'm a huge writing mess.
That makes me feel so much better.
And it's been really hard recently, actually, to write. I haven't written that much in the past few months after finishing my third book and going through the different edit stages and we're doing marketing and so on. It's also just mentally been pretty hard and emotionally pretty hard. But I have a full-time job, so I have one day off a week, and I work on Mondays.
Like a true artist.
Like any true artist.
There you go.
So
it ain't paying the bills.
Let's talk about editing, because I know when I write stuff, it's my baby. I don't want to let it go, those lines, because I just think that they're so funny and that they're so cute and that everybody's going to love everything. So explain the editing process that you go through and how you kind of subtract information to kind of like get the stuff across, so you don't have this huge Webster dictionary type book, because you could do that if you really wanted to.
I'm very lucky that I have these editors who work with me. So it's really nice to work with a publisher because I don't have to go out and find the editors. They come to me.
Right on.
Also, you have to leave your ego at the door.
Absolutely.
And you have to separate. I've had to separate the book from me. So critique is not critiquing me. It's critiquing the words. And they're certainly not perfect. Mm-hmm. I, from the beginning, have always been wanting feedback. It's really important to me. The same is happening right now with reviews. So on Goodreads, there are reviews, and I have 1-star reviews to 5 stars. Mm. And I take them all with as much of a grain of salt as I can, and I've had to stop reading them.
I think my best review from Goodreads for my book. So what has been your experience with them? Because, I mean, I got a 5-star, so I'm good. But, you know. once you get on their mailing list, like they seem to be really in the business of helping authors get their stuff out there. What's been your experience with them?
So Goodreads is basically social media for authors. It's a book social media site where anyone can review the books that are up there. So it's this amazing platform, and at the same time, there are people who are very, very popular reviewers and who don't necessarily write the best reviews, but they've got a ton of friends, and it's social media. So it's amazing that books have this, and also it's kind of the Wild West.
Yeah, it is.
I've really enjoyed it. My first review ever was a 1-star. From somebody who said she wanted to throw the book against the wall, and it was the worst book that she had read all year. So what happened is it was my first review, and it made me totally, if I hadn't been modest before, honestly, it can't get any worse than that. Mm. And so I had no expectations. So every good review after that was just huge bonus and happy.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? I am happy to hear that, you know, there are more romance writers out there, female romance
writers.
I'm
happy to hear that there are more writers out there.
Aww. It is nice. There are a lot of us.
So, so this is going to be a series with three books. And so are you now thinking about what your next project is now that these three are done?
Yeah, so the romance readers like series, and it's really fun to get into a world and create it and then sort of just go crazy with it. So I am thinking about another series. I've got three more books planned out, as much as I can plan, because like I said, I'm a mess. So it just, you know, things usually pop into my brain at 2 a.m.
Oh, okay, that's me too. My head pops off the pillow at 3 a.m. like, oh, I could have her do that.
Oh, yeah, and thank goodness I have a phone that I can email myself on because I can't turn on the light. That's awesome. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I understand. So so you said you have two kids.
I do, little ones.
Oh, yeah? How old?
4 and 6.
Aww.
Yeah, they're awesome.
I don't remember when mine were that age. Mine are 13 and 21. I don't remember. I don't remember all the... It's a good thing I don't remember all the diapers and all of, you know. Ugh. Okay. Yeah.
All right. So
Adriana, let's say the name of your book again and when it comes out.
So the book is Under Her Skin. It's officially out Tuesday, but I went to Barnes & Noble there yesterday. They're already there.
Yes!
The book is in Barnes & Noble.
Awesome.
So I went and waved it around.
And if I'm an ebook Kindle carrier...
Out Tuesday.
Okay.
And it's actually on sale right now for $2.51 on one of the big sites.
There you go.
So, yeah.
Audible?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. Hoping for Audible. I've had a few requests. So
all right.
It would be fun.
So we're also going to post all of those links on the Homegrown page
awesome.
So people can click on and catch that book whenever they can. Adriana, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
It's been fun.
I hope you had a good time.
I did. This was really fun.
Awesome.
So hot. So hot.
All right. So.
Wow, David, really?
Yeah, really. Really. You got a weekly rant for us?
I do. I absolutely do. So, I struggled this week with what to talk about this morning. The past 2 weeks have been really busy, both personally and professionally. And I will admit to a bit of procrastination on my part to write this particular rant. But as I sat to write, the two things that kept coming to mind were love and activism. At first glance, you may not think those things go together. You may think that if you're an activist for or against a certain thing, that it has nothing to do with love. You would be wrong. Love is the catalyst and the generator for any type of action. It's the root of it. And love can power it longer and stronger than any other emotion, including hate. King knew that. Rosa, Mary, John, and Septima lived it. Their love for their people, their wish for them to have every opportunity, the desire for their children to go further and be safer than they were, powered everything they did. And in the end, they outlasted the oppressors. The problem was that they hid the struggle from the younger generations. They made it seem magical and mysterious. We saw the benefits of it, but we were never privy to how the work was done. So we grew up with a false sense of security. A lot of us believed the fight was won. Activism, in its truest form, has to start with the love of something. A desire to change a system designed to injure someone you love. Then comes the hard part. It means action. It means taking your love and being willing to put yourself out there on the line for what you believe in. It also requires that you use what you have to accomplish that goal. And yes, it is courageous because it takes a different kind of courage to lay yourself open to public ridicule, arrest, and possible death. And make no mistake, it may come to that. King, Rosa, Medgar, and Diane knew that when they began their journey. They knew it, and they went anyway, not knowing if they would win. So no matter what you think of Black Lives Matter, you have to respect their love and activism. Especially in today's climate, they know that they are putting their very existence on the line for what they love. So, I'm not so naive to ask all of you to do the same. That's a decision you have to come to on your own. But here's what I will ask you to do. I will ask you to contribute your time and your talents. We are artists. We are the storytellers. We literally write history. And we can choose the stories we tell. We can choose what our art teaches. There may be a place for fluff, but now more than ever, we need to tell stories that highlight the humanity in all of us. We need art that celebrates connection rather than our division. That is within our power. We can choose to do that every day. And it can be our contribution to the movement or our way of resistance. Because every little bit helps. Everything we do now will be judged by history. I don't know about you, but I want my tombstone to highlight the badass life I led. So let's go out there and make it happen.
All right. Talking about love. Love has been kind of the theme of the whole day, you know?
I know, right? And I so did not plan that.
Yeah.
As it always happens, my rant is like,
Adriana
is on the
writes
theme.
About physical and emotional connectivity. Trey Crowder writes about just heartfelt conviction. And I'm all about love, baby. You know me.
Even though
I know nothing about romance.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. Girls are lining up outside the studio right now.
Yeah. Oh my God. But, yep. Much love. This has been Homegrown 94.7 WPVC. We still got 2 minutes. Leslie, you got anything going on this weekend?
What do I have going on this weekend?
Besides, well,
actually, I am having a little party for my castmates tonight.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I'm doing some homegrown cooking tonight.
Is you now?
Yes.
Also,
some comfort food. Some smothered pork chops, some greens, some potatoes.
Look,
you know.
I want to be able to stand up at some point today. I'll be doing comedy on the 7th at the Ante Room. I think that's on Tuesday. And also, my improv group, Bent Theater, has a show called Alternative Facts, where I'm doing an improv comedy tribute to truthiness.
Yeah, I saw Andy post about that. That looks dope.
We're going to be tearing up the whole Trump administration. So be there at Guerrilla Theater on the 17th. And this has been Homegrown. This is David and Leslie. Much love to you all. We are brought to you by Blue Moon Diner.
And we want to thank our two wonderful guests.
Our two wonderful guests, Trey Crowder and Adriana Anders. Sunday Morning Wake Up Calls next with your host, Sean McCord, talking about Goddess L, romance and relationships for their Valentine's Day show. Thank you. See you next week.
Listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.